You know how, please be seated.
Are we missing someone? should we just pop back to the cafe and see if they're there? In the meantime, Ms. Baker Galloway, did you have any questions?
No.
All right, can't fill the gap that way. Mr. Page, did you have any questions? Okay, we are Mr. Moore, that's fine. Usually, court can't start without me, but on this occasion it can't start without you, so good to have you back, no worries. All right, so we're in your hands with any questions that you might have.
I'm interested in the thinking behind what is your paragraph 13 of the Further Thoughts document, and this is the use of the lighter gravelly soils as runoff paddocks utilising the winter crops. So can you just step me through your thinking around why those paddocks are useful?
They don't get pugged, so they can, for example, if it's raining or wet conditions, those paddocks do not get pugged as much as soils under the pivot.
Is it fair to describe those paddocks as free draining, given the composition of the soil and the gravel?
I suppose so.
Yeah, I would say actually that those paddocks are higher up on the terrace, and I don't know you'd say they're free draining into any waterways or anything else. They're just dry ground, full stop. They're just gravelly, dry terraces.
And I wonder whether we might come back to the map where you had showed the location of the paddock, as I had understood it. It was the photograph with the irrigation areas. Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding, it was that wedge of land in a light sort of aqua colour,
yes,
to the left of the pivot.
Yes.
So, in short, that's where the is that where the wintering of stock is occurring, at least on this property?
Well, it is this year because we've got a crop in the paddock next door to it. Yeah. So some farmers, for example, would leave their stock on the paddock they're actually grazing. So sometimes we do that. But if it's wet conditions and there's pugging, we like to put them on a runoff paddock. And that's an ideal paddock because it is drier and it's next door to that paddock this year.
That would actually be a
And when you think about the suite of permits that you hold for this particular farming system, are there any restrictions in terms of the locations where farming activities can take place?
No.
And when you think about the water permit that was granted in 2020, I'm going to say, the 30... Where is It's permit RM19322-01, which is the taking use of surface water from Shepherd's Creek. You're familiar with that permit? And that was that one of the three you referred to for your dam, or is that an additional permit?
No. So there's three consents for the dam, and then there's the primary consent, which you're talking about, 01, out of the Shepherd's Creek drain. And then we've got a supplementary take, which is 02, for out-of-season water. It's actually tied to the minimum, to a flow, I think it's called the mean flow in the Tyree River. So when the Tyree River is at 9.4, we can take water at a higher rate, which often will occur in the winter time. When the Tyree is at a higher flow, we can fill that storage dam. That's the supplementary right.
So I want to just focus on what you had described as the primary right, so the 01 permit.
Mm-hmm.
Does that permit have any conditions relating to the use to which land can be put?
No.
And does it have any conditions relating to the use of inputs in a farming system, the likes of fertiliser application?
No.
No restrictions on stocking rates?
No.
Is there any requirement within that permit to monitor the effects on water quality associated with the farming operation?
So there's no requirement in the permit.
When you're thinking about this issue of risks associated with expanding the irrigable area, or in your evidence that your paragraph 24, you noted that there could be an unintended consequence of such a restraint with farmers more intensively farming within a said irrigated area. When you think about the drivers for intensity of farm use systems, is it your experience that the availability of water is perhaps the single greatest driver in terms of the potential productivity of use of land?
Can you explain the question again?
Yeah, it was a bit long-winded, I'm afraid. So when I'm thinking about, say, an irrigated part of a farm, when you think about the intensity of the farming activity that can take place on that land, is the availability of water perhaps the most significant driver in terms of productivity?
Can be, but it does depend on the season. Yeah. So some years, for example, this year, we had a huge rainfall in January. We didn't irrigate at all during January. Mm. So too wet. So there's no doubt about it. Irrigated land grows more grass.
So just thinking about this year when you had the January event, did that enable more productive or more intensive farming to occur, or was it the other way around in that situation?
Mr. Sangster shaking his head, so we just need that response on the record.
Our place was so wet that we had to wait for it to dry out, so we couldn't graze a lot of land, and there was so much water everywhere, we just had to take stock back to those drier areas of the farm, and we couldn't, it was just so wet that it was waterlogged. You said part of the river running through the middle of it, or it's running right through it, so we didn't have fencing or anything else, so for a while you got nothing, and even crops were too waterlogged, they don't grow. So they stunted, so it's, that would be my answer. I don't know if that's quite the question, but that's what happened anyway. It couldn't grow more at that stage, we had to wait for it to dry out.
So when you think about the potential for more intensive use of already irrigated land, what is it that you have in mind when you think about that risk?
So, for example, if I had a restricted irrigated area, I would be multiple cropping it. I would have more fertiliser on it. I would have more nitrogen on it. And I would be using a livestock that would give the greatest return at whatever particular time it was. I would be strip grazing it, and I would be utilising every blade of grass. If I had a restricted area and that was the only area I had and it was in drought, I'd be making sure that I got the most that I could out of that area.
So when you think about farming systems, isn't that already the case where farmers are using their land as productively as they can in light of the availability of water that they have?
No, so if you think about our farm, for example, which I've tried to explain to you, so there's lots of water in the shoulders of the season, and that allows us to put in crops and do other things, and it really helps make the whole system work. And because we can do that, you know, it gives us a lot of flexibility. We can have those crops which help us when flows are low. So we're not actually having to rely on just a small area because we have that more water that we can use over a large area through the shoulders.
If paddocks fallow, I suppose, too, you can leave areas that aren't grazed to get whatever to, for the, you know, if we're going to direct drill, we can spray them out and leave them there 6 weeks. And we know that on the shoulders of the season we'll have water again, we'll irrigate it and put an autumn crop in, I suppose, or whatever, but, yeah, to get it back into production.
So when you then think about the potential to expand an irrigable area, presumably you'd need to add further infrastructure.
Are you talking about us or farmers in general?
Just perhaps as a general proposition, exploring this constraint or the risks around the constraint on an irrigable area.
It would depend on the irrigation system. If you've got the hard hose guns or different things, you can, as long as you've got a main line or a water source.
So I think the point I was trying to make is that, I mean, economics dictate it, but in our example, I mean, it was better to make the pivot slightly larger because it gives you more flexibility. But, I mean, you can't be stupid about it because it's too expensive. So the way we get around that is, I mean, we have a little, and a lot of farmers could do this, put a little bit of K-line around the outside of their pivot, which would give them a bit of extra feed or flexibility during the spring and the autumn in particular. And I don't think that's a bad thing. There's still the same amount of water, but they can just choose it. And I can tell you from our figures with the Manitoba Irrigation Company, so we have a roster of 36,000 cubic metres every roster. Now, a lot of the time we don't use that full allocation, but there will be a period during the summer dry that we will, but a lot of the time we don't.
If you're thinking about stretching the water to go a little further in terms of the drive for efficiency, would that require a shift in irrigation system to a more efficient system?
There's no doubt about it that pivots, VRI, all those sort of things are much more efficient than flood irrigation and border dike.
And in terms of those that conversion, you've provided some evidence today around the cost of that, a significant farm investment.
Yes.
And in order then to see a return on that, increases in production would be required?
Yes, of course.
And when you think about enabling the increase, or if there's no restriction on the increase in area, there's the potential for that increase in production to result in different effects on the environment than in terms of irrigated land compared to non-irrigated?
What's the question?
I might actually leave that for a different witness. Perhaps I'll put it this way. You, through your experience with the current planning framework, there are no controls in terms of the current planning framework in relation to the intensity of farming land use. And so if irrigation areas are expanded, again, there's a risk of there being no control on the effects associated with those increases.
Do you agree with that? But if you're not familiar with the operative plan, you should say so.
No, I think that you know, in your national water policy statements and everything else, and we can't suddenly convert our farm to a dairy farm or cropping farm or anything else. We've got it's covered off like that. And as far as the VRI goes, that put on there for water quality and everything else. You know, we aren't irrigating drains and we aren't having runoff, and we can stop irrigating those paddocks in an environmentally friendly way.
So I think when you talk about an increase in production, I mean, we haven't changed anything that we're doing. What it means to us that we would perhaps grow our lambs a kilo heavier, for example. So we're not talking about suddenly doing a lot of dairy or extra cattle or anything else. So we're just talking about doing what we do at the moment, but doing it better, and also having more security around the fact that we know that we've got the water in the summer and that it's future-proofed for sometime in the future. If we had to turn our water off, we would have the storage and it would be more reliable. So you're not exposed to the store market. Mm.
But there are no restrictions in your consents that would stop you undertaking some of those activities within your irrigated area?
Well, I think when there's all the regulations coming from government about waterways and water quality and all those things, and we factored all that into when we were trying to design our proposal. So, I mean, we're aware of that, and we think we farm with that in mind.
Okay, thank you. You provided some evidence in relation to flow sharing and mm-hmm. the arrangements that are in place with respect to your takes.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the flow sharing agreements, they work outside of the consenting regime, if I understood that correctly.
So I couldn't tell you about the Tyree, but I know that, you know, the one in the Tyree, some of the people on the Tyree flow sharing aren't tied to the wind and flow in the Tyree. We are. The others are doing it voluntarily. Whereas with the take with Crossins, that is a condition of our consent that we flow share with them. Well, they have to flow share with us, really, because we're downstream.
So is that a restriction on your permit?
Yes.
Is there a similar restriction on their permit?
Yes. So that has been in place since 2013, when they renewed their permit.
Thank you. Those were my questions.
So, again, in relation to your paragraph 24, and again, the same sentence that Mr. Moore's been asking you questions about, similar evidence has been given, but no explanation has been offered by the witnesses as to the increase in intensity in production. If you're not able to expand your irrigable area. And do you understand that that's what we're talking about? It's
yes.
not, you know, taking irrigable area. It's not the removal of irrigable area. It's the expansion out to areas not hitherto irrigated. So that's what the area question's about, so you understand that.
Mm. So, you know, it costs a lot of money.
Mm.
And if you can spread that, your allocation, mm. I mean, I wouldn't mind having a monthly allocation or whatever it is, but I'd like to be able to spread that water over a bigger area if I could.
Mm.
That would give me a lot more choices and a lot more profitability. But, you know, like we do, using that K-line strategically, so not investing in infrastructure that is fixed, but having some flexibility around the edges and when there's plenty of water would really, really help farmers' bottom lines.
Mm. And the counterpoint to that is that there is nothing in the operative plan and nothing in this plan change which manages the outputs of increased usage of land under irrigation. And I think you've acknowledged that as well. Yeah. For the record, if you just say yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And so I'm really interested in in your answer that, well, if you don't expand the area, which may be irrigated, then farmers will just intensively farm their current farming area. And your example was that you put another kg on the lambs. So how do you achieve that? Where would you do it in terms of your property, and how do you achieve it?
So the best way to do it is to grow specialised crops. Mm-hmm. So you could do that. For example, you could put in paddocks of chicory or rape.
Mm-hmm.
Lucerne's also very good,
mm-hmm.
type of thing. Or new grass, high quality, more clover, plantain. So it's about feed quality,
mm-hmm.
and growing them quicker.
So feed quality, is it necessarily about putting more stock on the land?
No.
No.
And so I think at the moment, there really is a drive towards getting more value from what you've got,
rather than increasing endlessly the number
stock,
of animals.
Stock numbers, yes.
Okay. All right. And then, so if you are improving the quality of feed, therefore the energy, and therefore the, I guess, the meat on the lamb, is it necessarily also the case that you need to put more fertiliser, more nitrogen on the land?
So we just put the same.
You just put the same.
Yeah.
So you're improving, or you're being more selective in the crop type, but you're not necessarily putting more fertiliser, more nitrogen on the land.
So, look, we soil test and we put on what is required.
What is required. Okay. All right, that's helpful. And that was my question. So, have you got any questions?
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Those are the court's questions, so thank you for your presentation.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you. All right, so, I think we've got Rachel Armstrong and Mark McGregor. All right, so we're just going to ask Mr. Moore to help us out by confirming who you are and whether you've provided a brief of evidence, which I think you have. This being it.
Oh,
yep.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Right, we'll start with Mrs. Armstrong.
Yep.
If you could state your full name for the record.
Rachel Ann Armstrong.
And you are here speaking today in support of a submission lodged by
Balquhidder Farming.
Thank you. And Balquhidder Farming Limited has lodged a submission on Plan Change 7.
Yes.
And you have also prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to make in support of that submission, and a copy of those key points has been circulated to the court this morning.
Yes.
And do you confirm that the evidence that you're about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Now, Mr. McGregor, can you state your full name for the record, please?
Mark James McGregor.
And you too are here giving evidence in support of the submission lodged by Balquhidder Farming Limited on Plan Change 7?
Yes.
And do you confirm that any evidence that you give today is true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Belief? Now, I take it that you would prefer to read the summary statement?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll leave you to do that, and then I may have some questions, and the court may have some questions.
Bring your hands.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark McGregor, and this is Rachel Armstrong. We have a small family-run farm in the Nenthun Valley in East Otago. We farm with our two children, Liam and Paige. Neither of us feel comfortable up here presenting this, so you'll have to bear with us. But we feel strongly against the planned changes and what it'll mean to the future of farming, not just for us, but for everybody. So we would like to present this to you. My dream has always to own my own farm. I left school when I was 15 and worked on various farms. Then I went shearing for 20 years, I shore in the UK, America, Australia and New Zealand. I bought my first property, a lifestyle block, in Oamaru when I was still shearing. And then eventually Rachel and I bought a 115 hectare property in Matakanui. From there we purchased a 480 hectare property at Otorihua and then a 720 hectare property at Dunback. In 2017 we purchased Rockburn, where we are now, a 740 hectare property with an irrigation right out of the Nenthun River. We have not been lucky enough to have any backing to get us into farming. All of these properties that we have bought have been run down and have required a lot of work. New fencing, stock water schemes, regrassing and irrigation systems. This has enabled us to add value to each property along the way, providing the capital in order to purchase an economical unit to support our family. So through hard work, 20 years shearing and 10 years of developing properties, we were in the position to purchase Rockburn, which we hope would be our forever farm. Within refinancing Rockburn, it was at extreme limit of our debt servicing. With also requiring a lot of love, it also did have the infrastructure of our irrigation scheme in place. It hadn't been used to its full potential, we in the bank could see the benefits and it would provide in the form of finishing stock and establishing winter crops and feed to keep us out of the volatile stock market. It would safeguard us against drought conditions prominent in the East Otago region. For example, fat lambs fetch between $115 and $120. Where a store lamb can be $60 to $80. This year, we didn't have to store a lamb. The irrigation allowed us to grow enough feed to finish our lambs. The water allocation associated with Rockburn is extremely important in keeping us viable and servicing our debt.
Plan Change 7 has very real effects on our performance as an economical farming unit and poses a very real threat to our viability. Policy 10A.2.2, which looks at imposing a short-term frame of only 6 years. This not only allows us to plan to the future, but able to react to changes in the environment with any real certainty. We as families need more certainty so that we can adapt and move forward with the changing times, with confidence that what we have undertaken in terms of investment and progress will remain within current permit conditions. A longer time frame is necessary so that financial and productivity plans can be made. We purchased Rockburn, a property requiring a major amount of development on the irrigation scheme, to be done to establish it as a profitable and viable unit and to service our debt. Under this policy, and current and future developments are going to be risky as we have no insurance as to their future legibility. Short-term frames are going to impose higher financial burdens on us. We are currently in the process of renewing our deemed water permit. We are halfway through its completion and it has already cost in excess of $15,000. This is a huge expense and it is unrealistic to expect us to do this every 6 years, especially as such a short time frame does not let us plan for the future, limits our confidence and our ability and also the bank backing to adapt to these changing conditions. For us, a longer time frame is vital as it provides us more certainty, allows us to plan longer term and make more decisive decisions. It provides flexibility to adapt to changes in climate and farming systems. We also oppose Rule 10A 3.1.1, which aims to limit water use in terms of area under irrigation to that used in the irrigation season of 2017 to 2018, and to limit the total water take to that used between 2012 and 2017. This is a very damaging and detrimental way to determine future allocations. It in effect grandparents' water use. How did they come up with the arbitrary years? Have they considered the changing environmental conditions, like more prevalent and longer periods of droughts? How did these irrigation seasons compare against a 10-year average? Had they looked at the different regions rather than putting a blanket cover over the whole of Otago? It is unfair to base water use to a single irrigation season. Water use is seasonal dependent. Records fluctuate from year to year depending on the amount and frequency of rainfall within a season, as well as farm management practices, for example, crop rotation and pasture renewal. Droughts have become more common. Water is the key to productivity and viability in such conditions. Us as permit holders who make substantial investments to increase the reach and efficiency of our water takes, while still operating within our current permit conditions, should be able to continue irrigating this land. The prohibition of this is both extremely unfair and detrimental to the permit holder. I can't see how the council can go back in time and apply a date that is no longer current to where we are today. Everything changes, weather, social, economical and technology. How can you base future water allocations on data from 4 to 5 years ago? You have to remain in the present to allow us as farmers to farm within current conditions. These rules of in effect, grandparenting water use do not consider any investment the permit holder has made in good faith and within their current water permit conditions since these arbitrary dates. Using data from the past to base future water allocations is unfair and will have significant negative impacts on farmers in these drought-prone areas who rely heavily on their current allocation to survive and remain viable. As earlier mentioned, we bought Rockburn in April 2017. Previous owners had invested in irrigation infrastructure, but it had not really been used. We purchased this property as we could see its irrigation potential. East Otago is renowned for its drought conditions, and the last 2 years have been good examples of this. Being able to grow feed during such events is vital to ensure the well-being of our stock and to remain profitable. Our goal since possession has been to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the current irrigation system, which we have done while still operating within our current permit conditions. In 2018, our dam permit came due. During the process of renewing this, we had extensive discussions with Otago Regional Council staff. We had plans to invest heavily in the irrigation system to improve its effectiveness and wanted to ensure any investment made would be valid in the future. They reassured us on numerous occasions that as long as we could prove that we were using our current allocation, then we would keep it. Since then, we invested heavily with regard to capital and infrastructure to achieve the whole potential of the current system. We have spent in excess of $157,000. We replaced an electric pump. We have upgraded to a diesel pump at the river. We have replaced underground mains. We've built a weir in the dam to increase water storage. We have replaced above the ground aluminium pipes with K-lines. And we have replaced asbestos mains with PVC pipe. The inclusion of the above rules would render this huge investment, even though made within the confines of our current permit condition, non-compliant and prohibited. This would not only impose a significant burden on our financial situation, as this investment will never be able to recoup its costs, but also significantly inhibits our ability to operate viably within this drought-prone area. This is punishing us for future-proofing our property against droughts and allowing us to remain profitable on these dry years. Making us apply for non-complying activity consent when we have been working within our current water conditions is really extreme. We undertook these developments to get ahead, to service our debt and ensure the best welfare of our stock. I feel we also need to mention that we are the only water take from the Nentham River. Our take has no implications on any other surrounding properties. Through the process of renewing our deemed permit, we were required to employ an ecologist to examine the health of the river. Mac Hickey from Water Resource Management did this investigation. His findings showed that the health of the river was in a good state. The habitat and fish species above the point of take were the same as those below the point of take, indicating that us taking water from the Nentham River was not having any negative effects on the impacts on the environment. Matt Hickey's report has been presented to the Otago Regional Council. We have worked hard all our lives to achieve our goal of farm ownership and operating a viable farm to provide for our family. Farming is all we know, it's what we love, it's our livelihood. But quite honestly, if this policy is passed, our ability to continue farming Rockburn, which we had hoped would be our forever farm, will be in very real jeopardy. We will never recover the capital that we invested in developing the property with regard to its water use. As water records during the seasons of 2012 and 2017 and 2017 to 2018 show very little low water use, our future water allocation will be at a minimum, rendering this property not far off a dry block land. We will need to reduce stock units as we will no longer be able to produce the feed required. We will struggle to make debt repayments and our farm will no longer be worth what we paid for it 4 years ago, as it will no longer be capable of irrigating 19 hectares of flats, which was reflected in the purchase price. We want to continue farming here to provide for our family and support the community, but these policy changes have serious implications. Please consider the amount of effort, resources and capital that we invested and how these policy changes will affect us. This is our livelihood.
Thank you. Thank you. Now I'm just going to see if Mr. Moore has any questions, and he may well do. I think in part possibly because some of the rules are moving on, the schedule again is moving on. It's a bit what I was talking about this morning. It's actually there's some changes which are moving in response to farmers' legitimate concerns and quite some distance. So some of the things that you are rightly concerned about may be addressed, but maybe some other matters are at large. So, So with that in mind, and that's what I was talking about, Someone somewhere has to effectively start communicating what those changes look like. But it was a bit early in the process for that to happen. Anyway, Mr. Moore, your questions.
Thank you, Your Honour. Thank you for the statement this morning, and thank you for raising what are very real issues with Plan Change 7 as it was notified. In terms of the effect of the provisions as they then were on the farming system that you operate, as Your Honour has just mentioned, there have been some movement or changes in relation to particularly the schedule in Plan Change 7 to seek to address what are very real concerns being raised. And I want to ask you some questions this morning about your farming system and particularly your irrigation to help understand whether the way in which the method and the plan change is adapting is actually responding to some of the concerns you've expressed. So you've indicated in your statement this morning that you purchased Rockburn in 2017.
That's correct.
And it is a 740-hectare property. And is it that there's 90 hectares of irrigable flats on the property?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. Yes.
So can you tell me a little more about the irrigation system that is in place on the property?
So we have a right out of the Nenthorn stream, and it's a right of 60 litres a second. It's a sole take. We're the only one that takes any irrigation water out of that creek. So that is pumped into a storage dam. So that dam is filled over the winter from runoff from our hill country. So the start of our irrigation season, that dam is completely full. And we use the take out of the river to top that dam up during the season.
When it's needed.
So, winding the clock back to 2017, when you took over the property, the deemed permit was in existence at that point.
Yes.
But wasn't being exercised.
There was a pump in the river, a little single phase pump in the river that pumped. We estimated about 10 litres a second out of the river, so it was completely uneconomical, and it's been changed now.
So you described having replaced an electric pump, so you've replaced that particular pump?
Yes, so that was a single phase pump in the river, so we have replaced that with a diesel pump that lifts our 60, I think it's actually 55 litres a second out of the river, sorry, not 60. And that does it, yes.
You've been able to take then your full allocation using the diesel pump?
Yes, we have, yes.
And what would have been the first year that you took your full allocation?
Yeah, I think the first 17 we used a little electric pump, and then in 19 we replaced the pump with a diesel pump, yes.
And then last year was the first time we had the pump at the other shed going.
So we'd also replace the pump that is used for the irrigation system, not the one out of the river. That has also been replaced as well with a three-phase variable speed drive, much more economical pump out of the irrigation pond.
So sticking with the pump taking the water out of the river, is there a water meter attached to that?
Yes, that's all part of our consent. There has to be a water meter there.
And that water meter, is it a new meter that's been put in place with the diesel pump?
Yep, it's all been done at the same time.
So you'll have a record from that point in time showing the maximum rate of take from that pump?
We've got it and you've got it as well, yep.
And when you think about the area of land under irrigation, can you describe to me how the land is irrigated? What irrigation system are you using currently?
Okay, so when we went there was some underground mains in. Probably about three quarters of it was underground mains. And they used a few K-lines and they used aluminium pipes and sprinklers that they used to move every day. Mm-hmm. So now they don't exist. The whole lot is K-lined.
And when did you get the full extent of the K-line in place?
We're just getting it. This summer was probably the first time we've had it all up and running.
So when you think about that K-line, it is essentially being used on areas that had previously been irrigated using the aluminium pipes?
Yes, it was, yes.
And the irrigation using the pipes, I want you to think about the period of time from September 2017 through to March 2020. And so the area of land under irrigation at that point in time. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, they had some K-lines, and to be totally honest, I wouldn't know how much area they could cover with those aluminium pipes. To me, it was a very time-consuming, inefficient way to use your water.
So thinking about that date range, would you have been irrigating at some point during that period of time, so the 2017 to 2020, the 90 hectares of land?
No, we don't. We use that land. We grow some crops to finish our lambs. We grow all our feed to make winter feed, to make baleage and silage out of. So once we've used that water to establish those crops, those paddocks are not watered again over the summer. Sometimes we can put another crop in the autumn and they'll be watered again in the autumn. With that allocation water we've got, it's not enough to do everything all at once. Our other permit out of the pond that we irrigate out of is only... storage dam. It's 60 litres a second, but it's only for 12 hours a day. So the pump we've installed only takes 30 litres a second, but we do it for 24 hours a day.
So when you think about the area of land you had under irrigation between 2017 and 2020, if I asked you to shade on a map of your property the maximum extent of irrigable land over that period, you'd be able to do that for me?
Yes.
And if you think about that area as representing the maximum amount that you've irrigated, so if you've irrigated a paddock once in that time, it would be included. Are you irrigating areas beyond those areas after 2020?
No.
So when we think about Plan Change 7 and these changes I mentioned a few moments ago, one of the changes that the experts are recommending to the court relates to the maximum area under irrigation not being fixed to the 2017 year, but to cover that 3-year period. So insofar as you've been irrigating over that 3-year period, you would fit within what the experts are recommending. So that's one of the changes that is being recommended. Perhaps the other concern that I understand you two have raised relates to the change in your irrigation infrastructure, particularly the pump. So you've described today that you now have a pump that can take at your maximum amount under your permit, so the in-river, it's not an in-river, the take from the river, your diesel pump. Another one of the changes being recommended by the experts is that provided a maximum rate of take was taken prior to June 2020, I think was the date, 30 June 2020. So if we think about that date, would you have been taking using your new diesel pump at your maximum permitted or authorised take before 30 June 2020?
Before, yes.
Yep, but you've got to remember this year, generally we got 6 inches of rain. We didn't need to irrigate. So that's going to show a big difference in our maximum take as well.
So when you think about the way that the schedule is now intending to operate, it's about reflecting the maximum rate of take, not the average of takes over a period of time. So concerns about gaps or dry years, those concerns have sought to be addressed in the changes that are being made.
So do you understand what Mr. Moore is saying? As long as you fit your max, what's likely to be the maximum at once before 2020, then that's it. You know, we've secured what we think is you going forward, if you like, under the schedule. If, of course, you've been wet for the last 3 years since taking over the property, that's a bit more difficult because, you know, you wouldn't have been pumping.
Okay.
What do you think? We want to know where the gaps are so we can see how where the response should come. So if there are gaps in what we're saying, we need to know.
The gaps are... But when we got that rain at Christmas time, we have to take our pump and everything out of the river because it just floods. Some of our land that we normally have stock on, we can't put stock on it because it's underwater. So that's where our gaps occur. And when we're on our crop rotation and our grass rotation around the irrigated country, there can be gaps there because that paddock, we've just watered it to get it started and then it's fine, it's away. Or the lucerne might be too high to cut, so we don't water it until we've cut it. So that's where our gaps sort of fit in our program, is that?
You can't, kind of, but I still think you're covered. As long as you've irrigated, as long the maximum area, you're not required to water all of that maximum every year, but once. And so many farmers have a mixed model of farming, you know, where only some paddocks are irrigated. Some paddocks are irrigated once or twice in spring or autumn to start the crop up, and that's it. But provided that 90 hectares has been irrigated at once, if not many times, over, you know, the relevant period, that's enough. You're in. I think what the plan change is trying to do is and there's a lot of debate around whether it should. It's a question for the court, but it's not to irrigate another 90 hectares somewhere over there.
Yeah.
So that's what it's moving away from that, and it'd be because there are land use implications.
So for the water take as well, if we had irrigated the 55 litres a second out of the dam, the river once, then that's
your maximum.
That's
okay. And then the question is, you know, because you guys haven't owned the property that long, it's only 3 years, and it's got new irrigation infrastructure. We're all going to K-line, but is that maximum you know, a reasonable maximum, if you like, for the growing conditions that you've got out there.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And if it is, I think you're all right under the schedule.
Okay.
But is there something else that we're not getting? So, for example, irrigation, we've got a lot of folk who might have stranded irrigation infrastructure, so they've put down the main line, but they haven't got as far as actually putting in the pivot or putting in drippers or whatever it is for cherry trees. So the proposal from the parties is that it's enough to get the irrigation mainline in, even if you haven't rolled out the rest of it. But in your case, I think you're saying you have actually rolled out your K-line now. You've made that investment. It's there. So I don't think there's an issue about stranding investment as far as that goes. But is there any other investment that you've made which could have been stranded, maybe stranded, of a different type? You know, and I was thinking, well, maybe you're talking about your pumps, but I'm thinking your pumps are all right. But if you were talking about your pumps, then that would be something we'd look at.
We've
pretty much everything's done.
Everything's done. It's actually all been used too. What do you reckon?
It's covered. The situation's covered. It's been helpful, and it's helpful to have some actual on-farm situations to test the evolving thinking around the schedule to make sure it is responding to the situations that have been helpfully raised in evidence. The final topic that I wanted to discuss with you, I suspect, will be very brief, but we'll see. You have a deemed permit and you're the only take from the Nenthorn River, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Does your permit by any chance have any priorities recorded on it that you're aware of?
We're the only priority, I think.
I have no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just had one question. That was all very helpful, thank you. I just don't know where the creek that you're taking the water from is. I wondered if you were able about that.
It comes out of the, it's called the Dighton Creek, and it comes from the country, McRae's, right round into the stuff that the dock own. There it's quite a big catchment. We probably should have some photos in too, because like it's not a very big creek, but there's a lot of water comes down. It's a huge catchment, you know. That's called the Dighton Creek.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, thank you for that. That gives me more of an idea.
We have no further questions. Would say that it is really important for that schedule now to be properly communicated to everybody. You know, there's still some work to be done, but it's more or less now everybody's moving, and all the witnesses that are moving in the same direction. So we think you are covered, but we'll keep you in mind. We're just not sure.
We've just received an update to the way the schedule works, and we've got the experts are going to take us through how it works, and we need to be sure that we understand that.
We're kind of like the farmers in the room, and as much as no one's actually pitched it to us, so we're just sort of reading it and we're going, oh, what does that mean? And we think we broadly know what it means, but the witnesses actually have to come back and explain themselves, and they're going to be doing that next week.
Okay.
Yeah. But that, but we'll keep that in mind. All right. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we'll just move on to, take lunch at 1 o'clock if we just finish the primary sector case. So, Mr. Crutchley.
Could you confirm your full name for the record, please?
Geoffrey Robert Crutchley.
And you've lodged a submission on Plan Change 7?
I have.
And that submission was lodged in your own name?
It was.
And you have prepared some notes highlighting the key points that arise with respect to your submission on Plan Change 7?
That's true.
And you've circulated with the court a copy of those notes?
I have.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you are about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
If you could perhaps take the court through your summary and then remain for any questions.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to my submission. My name is Geoff Crutchley. I'm a farmer from Maniototo and hold shares in the Maniototo Westside Irrigation Company, which is part of the Maniototo Irrigation Scheme. My involvement in water management spans nearly four decades. I was chairman of the Maniototo Irrigation Scheme in its various forms from its commissioning in 1984 until I retired in 2016. I chaired the Tairi Trust for its first 3 years from 2000. I remain as chair of Upper Tairi Y Incorporated, which began as the Upper Tairi Management Group, Water Management Group, in 2006. This group is currently engaged in a major wetland management program named Te Aki Maniototo. I served as chairman of the Clive and Catchment Company during the consenting process. In my submission, I state my opposition to Plan Change 7, believing it to be flawed in both method and intent. I note that changes to the proposed plan have been submitted regarding the averaging of historic takes and the requirement for applications to seek reduced allocation. I believe the need for these changes is indicative of the haste in development and the failure to adequately consult, casting doubt on the fundamental assertion that the existing plan is not fit for purpose. The discouraging increase in irrigated area, as has been discussed by previous witnesses, is contrary to efficiency and best use objectives. Water quality issues have been unjustifiably associated with irrigation, but where there has been a correlation, it has involved intensive land use with high application rates. In a water-short region, it can be sensible to increase the land-to-water ratio where land is at a lesser premium than water. I suspect that this focus on area stems from assumptions made in the Skelton report, which falsely linked deemed permits in the Tairi catchment to a large number of conversions to intensive land use. I'm concerned that this may have contributed to efforts to reduce or limit the water assigned to these permits, because in fact a small number of such conversions in Maniototo is mostly dependent on RMA consents. It has nothing to do with dam permits. Concern about over-allocation also seems to be a major driver. Although the Tairi River is often described as being over-allocated, this state is of no significance to the health of the river. Where minimum flow settings are in place, any application to take water for immediate use should proceed under the existing plan without posing any threat to other uses or to the health of the river. It should be kept in front of mind that the reason for this upheaval of the lives and businesses and the general well-being of so many rural families is the failure of the Otago Regional Council to meet its obligations. In these circumstances, I believe the fairest compromise will allow applications to proceed under the existing plan where minimum flow settings are in place. Where these settings remain to be determined, the status quo should be maintained by the issue of non-notified consents until such time as this work has been completed. In conclusion, I reiterate my disappointment that this plan signals an abandonment of the effects-based approach that was the main characteristic of Plan Change 6, or the important characteristic, and that it was an approach which promised to incentivise and harness the energy, the expertise and the passion that exists in communities. Inflexible top-down rules-based approaches tend to alienate the people most capable of owning the problems and developing innovative solutions. These are the people we need if we are to sustain a community, the community-based structures that are required to honour Te Mana o Te Wai.
All right, thank you. Any questions? No questions. Anybody else got any questions? Thank you.
I don't have any questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Crutchley. I have no questions. I understand from where you're coming from, the perspective that you have. So your evidence is clear. Thank you. Shag Valley.
I'll take an oath from the Bible. It's fine.
God, that the
Can you state your full name for the record?
James Alexander Thompson.
And you are appearing today to give evidence in support of the submission lodged by the Shag River Irrigators Group?
That is correct.
And you have prepared a summary of the key points that you wish to make with respect to that submission and Plan Change 7?
That is correct.
And a copy of your notes have been circulated with the court just now?
Yes.
Do you confirm that the evidence that you're about to give is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Perhaps if you could take the court through your summary and then remain for any questions.
Certainly. Your Honour, thank you for the opportunity. In deference to the tangata whenua, I prefer to refer to the Shag as the Waihemo because it actually gives some consequence to how the Waihemo works, in that 70% of the water in the Waihemo is carried by way of the aquifer. So whilst we still use the colloquial title, we're basically a like-minded group of seven irrigators who decided to present collectively. We are members of our catchment group and felt that this was a more efficient way of making our thoughts known. We feel very much that we're collateral damage in this situation because of the climatic difference we have to the traditional irrigation areas. So one, we oppose Plan Change 7 in its proposed form as it fails to take cognizance of the various climatic differences experienced in Otago. And in fact, the Regional Council's current plan for freshwater management units has East Otago and North Otago in a collective area. So what we have there is a provincial area that in the south catchments support a podocarp forest to the extremely dry tussock lands of the Upper Waitaki and the Kakanui. We suggest that treating the Waihemo on the same basis as Central Otago is manifestly unfair. And I've actually supplied the court with rainfall records that have been kept over 67 years at Ford's Dairy Farm for the Meteorological Service, which shows the spread and the overall impact that rainfall can make on water usage in the Waihemo. We totally oppose the proposal to limit consents to 6-year terms on exactly the same basis that a lot of other submitters have made. But one of the things that we believe very strongly with in the Waihemo is the more efficient use of water, and currently 44% of our members have or have under construction water storage facilities to allow water takes when the river flows are high. The current health of the Waihemo is reported by Land Air Water Aotearoa on a 10-year trend, 2011 to 2019, as the river being in the top 25% of lowland rivers in most measurement categories. And in fact, the ORC's own 2014 study stated water quality in the Waihemo is generally good. We're aware that the Regional Council has other studies that have never seen the light of day, because we actually had 9 bores put down into the aquifer to measure water quality, and we've never seen any results from that study. We submit that the proposal to limit consents to a 6-year term will undermine the development of more storage capacity and the adoption of modern irrigation technologies. And has been alluded to by other submitters, capital requirements to borrow that money, you need some tenure of supply or otherwise lending support is far harder to get. Thirdly, we oppose the proposal the original proposal on the water usage, and I understand that as the modifications are now being in place. However, again, referring to the recorded waterfall, I'm a Southlander by birth, and people always ask me about living in East Otago, and I say that on a 6-year average, you have 2 dry, 2 average, and 2 wet years. Don't think this is Southland. And in fact, if we take the 12 to 19 years, we've had 2 years below average, 1 average, and 4 years well above. So for us to take water in those years that are well above is not only unnecessary, but would be irresponsible. As a group, we fully support the desire to support, protect and enhance our environment and use our resources wisely whilst protecting the underlying values of the Tangata Whenua and the Waihemo catchment. We believe that consultation and collaboration offer a far greater way forward than the current council policies. That's us.
Thank you. Right, questions, Mr. Moore?
Thank you for your statement. I'm interested to know a little more about the source of water for the group. Are you operating under a standalone permit, or is it a combination of deemed permits? Or?
I currently understand, according to your council's information, there are 17 permits issued for the Waihemo. In my particular case, I have 2 permits, so I would think that there is a multiplicity in some of them, and there are currently, to our knowledge, only 7 of us who are using irrigation.
So let's start with your 2 permits. Are those deemed permits?
Yes.
And in terms of those permits, have you lodged an application to replace them?
I don't need to at this stage, because our permits don't come due till 23-24.
Okay. Are those permits Resource Management Act permits, though the old deemed permits been replaced at some point?
My understanding is that they're still deemed permits.
Okay. In terms of the two permits that you are perhaps more familiar with, do those record any priorities on them?
The use of the river is governed by a minimum flow, we've worked within that, as a group, within that flow for 40-odd years.
So do you have a flow-sharing agreement with the other water users on the river?
No, we are all limited by the flow at a certain point in the river, both upstream and downstream.
Right, so in a sense, once the minimum flow is hit, you will simply have to switch off at that point?
That is correct.
So there's no what's been described variously as water sharing amongst the groups, where perhaps one of you takes on one day and another takes on another day as the river gets down to its minimum?
No. And I revisit the fact that a large percentage of our water is in the aquifer, so that the river can at times appear to be extremely low, but there is still river flow and variation in it. Mm.
In terms of your two takes, are they groundwater takes or are they from the river?
They are pumped from the river.
Okay. Now, in terms of your... I'm assuming you have a farm property yourself?
Yes.
And your water is used for irrigation?
That is correct.
And what's your irrigation system?
I operate a K-line irrigation system. I have the drawings to install a pivot. But I've been actually waiting. The property that I purchased had existing consents from the Waitaki District Council for the removal of gravel, and part of the reinstatement of that area is I've built storage facilities. And again, I'm simply waiting to see how this bears out as to our next course of action. Mm.
So in terms of the land under irrigation, what hectareage, give or take, would you have?
The property is 181 hectares. Currently there are 40 hectares under the K-line, but that is only utilising one of the consents. Because of the logistics and the building of the pond, I haven't used the larger of the consents. So I've been taking... The one that allows me to take 12 litres a second. My other one actually allows me to take 17, and I haven't touched that as yet.
So when you say you haven't touched it as yet, how long have you been on the property?
We purchased the property in 2013, but actually didn't physically live on the property until 2016. Mm-hmm. So the first one was to restore the system that was in better state of health, which we've done. We've then now concentrated on the building of storage, and that will allow us to completely replace what was just non-existent on the other side of the river.
So when you think about the 40 hectares you've had under irrigation, would that have been under irrigation between September 2017 and March 2020?
In 1 year, yes, it was going red hot. But when God was doing the irrigating for us, it wasn't.
So in that situation, so the higher rainfall years, was there any need whatsoever for irrigation?
No.
Not. So just thinking again about that period of time, it did pick up on it on what we might describe as a drier year.
Well, but as I submitted, if you look at the 67 years of records in East Otago, it fluctuates greatly. The other thing that we need to bear in mind is that the catchment for the Waihemo is basically tussock grassland. And a mature snow tussock has the ability to harvest in excess of 30 litres of water and hold and store that. So we actually, even in the dry years, we can still have a reasonable flow in the river. And our contention is, again, I come back, that we have managed that well, the health of our river is well. Therefore, we would prefer to sit down with the council and work collaboratively to take the issue forward, not be beaten with a large stick and being said, having conditions imposed that don't really relate to our community.
So sticking with your, the 40 hectares under irrigation, could you draw that on a plan or a map of your property for me?
I certainly could. And in fact, what I do, I grow lucerne under that irrigation, because part of my responsibility as a landowner and an owner of the Waihemo River, because we're one of the only rivers in New Zealand where the title actually goes under the river. So to mitigate contamination of the river, I grow lucerne on both sides of the river to exclude stock access to the waterway. However, your council chooses or is currently choosing to prostitute the science of the overseer program, which was never created to measure nitrification, and even the Commissioner for the Environment agrees that it's an incorrect use of the program. So growing lucerne up the river to preclude stock actually says under the overseer that I'm putting nitrogen into the groundwater.
Well, the good news is Plan Change 7 is not not dealing with overseer.
I realise that, but I'm having a crack at you while I can.
Right, so we can show the 40 hectares of land under irrigation on a map.
Yes.
And in your words, your red hot year where you were irrigating, that you could show the maximum extent of that irrigation.
Correct.
Quite easily on a plan for me.
Yes, yes, no problems at all. And I believe that the rest of our group would be the same. Certainly the properties that I'm familiar with.
Yes. Thank you very much. I have no further questions.
Council, any questions? No. Have you got any questions?
I just had the one question. I was just looking at the council's water plan and its Schedule 2A, which is the one that lists the minimum flows. So I see the shared catchment, and it says both minimum flows apply, and one seems to be Goodwood Pump, and that's 28 litres a second, and the other one seems to be Craig Road, and that's 150 litres a second.
That's
just ringing any bells.
Yeah, no, that's correct. That in actual fact, the two flows that the irrigators monitor is at the Grange, which is further up from Craig Road, but Craig Road is the minimum flow of 150. And I can't find any exact historical data, but anecdotally, my neighbours tell me 45 to 50 days has been the maximum time the river has been below that minimum flow. So in terms of storage, we're all working towards 60 days plus storage so that we don't impact the river.
And do you remember approximately what date this minimum flow came in terms of this water plan?
Well, I've been in East Otago since 1992 and it's always been there as far as I'm aware.
Okay, thank you.
It's just to make sure that I've got the facts correct, you said that you had 181 hectares under irrigation?
No, the property is 181, currently 40 of which is under irrigation.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, I have the water to probably double that.
Okay, so that makes more sense of the note that I took. So you've got two water permits, one's for 12 litres per second, the other for 17 litres per second, is that correct?
Correct.
The 12 litres per second, that's irrigating 40 hectares, and you're using a K-line to do that?
That's correct.
All right.
You have or have not got storage for that?
No, 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 that's direct draw and, from the river.
Okay, the consent, you've also got consent for the 17 litres per second, but at the moment you're not actually irrigating under that consent?
No.
No. To do that you would need storage and you were thinking of putting in a pivot, is that right?
That's correct. Okay. We've got the draw, everything's in place.
Yeah.
But, for example, the reinstatement of the gravel pit for the storage facility, had I had to pay for that, it would have been $80,000 to $100,000 for construction. I'm looking at $100,000 plus for the plastic liner and then the infrastructure on top of it. So I'm not going to go out and borrow then $1 million to finish it off without some tenure of supply.
Sure. All right. No, I understand all of that. And you got any questions?
No.
Okay. So those are the court's questions. Anything arising? Nothing. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the court's time.
Okay. So that brings us up to you, Mr. Walsh, but I propose we take the luncheon break before we start with the Trustpower case. All right. Thank you. So back here at 1:45. All right. So we're adjourned. All rise.